welcome to the show. I'm Mike Indestra, host, and we're here today talking with the one and only Matt Crossland. Matt, how's it going?
Doing pretty good. How are you, Mike?
Good. It's been a while since we've done a podcast. I guess COVID kind of messed everything up for down the line, right?
Yeah, it seems like it. We've been talking about a new issue now for, what, 2-3 years now? And it will get out. I mean, everyone seems dedicated to getting another issue going, but it's definitely been delayed.
Yeah, and the server went down too, right? There was all sorts of issues we had.
Yeah, there were some problems with the website, but I got all those fixed, so we're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, I guess how long has Down the Line been around for? Because I mean, that's a lot of stuff to migrate, right?
Yeah, it's been around since what, 2006 or so?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna try to get everything on archive.org, so at least it'll always be there if anything else goes down.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff to be responsible for, and then, you know, try to make sure there's no missing links and all that kind of stuff. I've been doing a lot of archiving myself during COVID because you just never know. I guess I'll leave it at that. So I'm glad you're,
yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I'm glad you're, putting the stuff on archive.org. So we got to hang out, which was really great because normally we'd see each other like every 2 years when you'd come down to New Orleans for a conference, and that obviously didn't happen. And so, I didn't know you were going to audio feed, and then, you know, I got to meet you and meet Doug. So I was really happy about that. Is that the first audio feed that you have been to?
Yeah, that is the first audio feed I've been to, probably only the second music festival I've ever been to. I got to go to Cornerstone in 2000 to be at C2K, but so that's the limit of my experience with music festivals.
All right. Wow. Well, that's interesting because you're such a music fan. What keeps you away from the music festivals?
Generally just a lot of times the date that they happen, I just got other things going on, or just the expense or the amount of the time that it takes to either drive or fly there, you know. We don't get a whole lot of them in Texas. Well, I guess I will say it's probably my third. I did go to this thing called Texas Rock Fest, like in 94 or 95, just for one day. It was, Mortification was there, a bunch of, heavy metal bands were there. So I guess I was technically at that. That was kind of a festival.
See, that's interesting. So I can't remember any of the names of these fests, but when I lived in Texas, this was back in the 80s, man, there were days where we would go to these concerts that would last, you know, all day long. And I'd see, you know, Petra and Whiteheart and, you know, Leslie Phillips. And so that's a lot more than they ever had in New Orleans. You know, New Orleans nobody really comes down here. And when they do, they only do it once because nobody ever shows up to the shows, and it's just a loss, you know, so they never come back, unless a church is sponsoring it or something like that. But that really doesn't happen anymore because, you know, everybody's into praise and worship music now. So seeing Phil Keaggy, who used to come here, that just doesn't happen anymore. We did have a time where the manager of Jars of Clay was running the local Baptist seminary radio station. And so he brought people in. It was like Wayne Watson and Paul Smith or whatever, but it was something, you know. Other than that, we really didn't have that much. So, and I'd never been to Cornerstone. That just never worked out for me time-wise. But I was excited about audio feed. You know, you had mentioned cost as being prohibitive. Man, audio feed is so cheap, right?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, now with gas money, it was about the same cost for me to drive or fly there, so I ended up flying there. But you know, that's so. If gas costs come down, it'll be cheaper. That's for sure.
Yeah, we drove from New Orleans to Marion, Illinois, where my in-laws live, and then we drove the next day from Marion to Urbana, however you say it. And when I filled up there, gas is really expensive in Illinois. So that was the killer for us. Filling up just a half a tank, you know, $45 or whatever it was to get there. But the ticket prices, we just had a 1-day ticket, which was super cheap, and you were there the entire time. That was like, what, $80 for all 3 days?
Yeah, I think it was even like 70 something. It was pretty cheap.
Yeah, so this is that is awesome, and I'm so glad they did it because they didn't do audio feed for a couple of years. What acts were the main draw for you?
Well, really the main draw for me was just getting to go up there and hang out with some people. But then when I saw that they had Undercover, they had Moral Decay, they had who else was coming? Woven Hand was there, Pedro the Lion. I mean, there's some pretty big name acts that were going to be there. I tried to make it there to the night before the pre-day that all these fests have now. They always have the pre-day where you show up early a day, but my flight got delayed, so I missed all those. But you had The Wayside there, and Jeff Albell and Ping, and oh man, who else was there? There were several great acts that I really like, but probably, to see it, especially to see the Undercover show, since they do so few shows these days, that was a huge draw as well. So once I heard the airplane, that was kind of like, yeah, I definitely need to be there for that.
Yeah, I'm with you. That was pretty much what got me there. I would have liked to have seen Randy Stonehill the first night, the Thursday night. And thankfully, Jeff Elbel, like, I've talked to him on the phone, done interviews with him for, it seems like 10 years. You know, he did, he remastered two of my projects. And when I did the remaster, I got Michael Knott to do the paintings, and then you did the cover design. So those really mean a lot to me, but I'd never met Jeff, much less see him play anywhere. So it was nice that they did the front porch stage, and I actually brought my video camera and videoed it, which they're going to use because I had it in the dry part. I think the other guy that was recording the video, it was all wet. So the audio didn't come out very good because we were all hiding underneath the tent. So that was kind of cool, but I got to meet him. This guy named Doug Peterson, don't know if you ever heard of him, but he was around, which I was like super excited to meet, him too. And I think I fanboyed out the most, finally getting to meet Rick Alba. So that was really cool.
Yeah. That was the cool part as well is I don't know if this happens at other fests, but you just saw people from the bands roaming around, enjoying other bands, people from Undercover, people from Moral Decay. You saw Rick Alba, you saw, Rob from Moral Decay, you saw most of the, several of the Undercover people. You see Harry Gore, he was roaming around everywhere, seeing all kinds of acts. Jeff Albell, you saw him in several places, just checking out other acts. And he's, they're there to enjoy the festival as well. That was pretty cool to chat with them,
It totally was. I think there was, did you get to make it to every tent?
Briefly, yeah. The Sanctuary tent was a little too crowded for my likes, so I kind of hung out on the outside and watched in. But, I was still trying to do a little bit of social distancing, trying to do at least, something. But that was probably the one that I saw the least of just because of that. But I did catch a few acts there.
Yeah, it was such an interesting mix. And I had been to there before, I think in 2014 or something. Same thing. I drove, from my in-law's house to go there. And we only stayed for like, half of a day or whatever, just to kind of support the cause. And then we actually played at the front porch stage then, and then we left. But what was interesting there was like, man, that would have been such a cool festival for me as a teenager, because there's so much to do no matter what you were into, right? They had the Sanctuary that you mentioned, had some goth music and some other types of music like that going on, and then you could find something that you could kind of find some people to connect with. And I thought that would have been really cool for me as a teenager, instead of seeing Whiteheart and Petra.
There's no Whiteheart or Petra or anything really even close.
There's not, but there was definitely not. Maybe Randy Stonehill, he kind of was able to float around in those CCM circles.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe, yeah, he's about the closest you can get.
And also he floated around with Daniel Amos and those guys too. So he kind of was the bridge You know, he did. Yeah. Terry Taylor produced that's one true. Of his albums, but he also did a duet with Amy Grant. So,
yeah, that's true. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Yeah, that came up on my Spotify. My Spotify is really messed up right now because I've been going back and listening to early 80s Christian music. And so now when we get in the car, I can't just hit like daily mix 1, 2, or 3 because it's stuff that, you know, I don't really, you kind of get embarrassed if it's played out in the open a little bit.
yeah.
Sometimes some of it I'm really surprised by, like the third album Sacrifice by 441. Are you familiar with that record?
Yeah.
So I was always like coming from Morning Into Dancing, this real like Duran Duran-y new wavy thing, into this kind of like skeptical acoustic Gene Eugene produced thing. I never really got until I just recently re-listened to it. So it was something I couldn't get as a teenager. But now I kind of understand that record, or I can appreciate it on a whole different level. So that was kind of nice to be able to go back and listen to that again. And albums that, for me, totally stand the test of time, and I've, of course, brought them back up before audio feed, was Balance of Power by Undercover Branded.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, even their earlier albums are just really well produced lyrically. You know, I have some issues with, but they're just really good albums. Same thing with the first two Lifesavers albums that you can't find anywhere. And I think in that forum that we were at with Undercover, I think Joe Taylor said that that Lifesavers album, that first one, came out this like within a week of their first album coming out, and they went to a party and people were listening to those two albums. But those are both really good records.
Yeah, they are, and I think they also have expressed, they don't necessarily agree with all those lyrics anymore either, and it's okay. You know, it's interesting. So many bands get so embarrassed of their early work, you know, or for different reasons, which are usually legitimate in some cases. But so Undercover, they're not necessarily embarrassed by it. They just say, hey, you know, we were in a different place, and you know, this is what we wrote then. And, you know, it still speaks to some people, but we don't necessarily, totally agree with all his lyrics anymore, especially, Joe Taylor, now that he's an atheist. But I thought that was a very interesting interview where they broached that topic and just said, too many people are just, too divided over too many things. And we're brothers in this band, and we love making music together, and it should be okay for us to have a band, like this, of people with different beliefs that make music. It was a very interesting interview. I'm glad that John Thompson of True Tunes put that together, because I think it really helped people to connect with them, and maybe answer some questions about why the changes in the lyrics, and why the changes in the band, and that kind of stuff as well. So.
Yeah, I thought I wish they would have opened that up for questions and answers, because I would have had some interesting. I would have had some questions that at least I would have been interested in. Because that. I don't know. I won't go into that. I'll get one of them on the podcast, and we'll ask them some questions there. It was great to see Rick Alba, because playing with Moral Decay and then just roaming around, and just, you can't really say, and I don't think they really say, that it's a Christian festival. And then you have somebody like Undercover headlining, and then Pedro the Lion headlining the next day, right? So, what is it? I don't really know. And it's a weird scene. It's hard to explain, because
it's true,
isn't it? Because everybody kind of comes from a certain perspective, but I'll tell you this, my wife, who didn't grow up in a Christian environment, thank God, said this is a Christian she could tell this was a Christian music festival, where me, I'm like, no, if it is, then it's the kind of Christian music festival that I've always wanted to go to, because there's really nothing overt anywhere, and you could have someone, nobody was there calling out anyone's, if you haven't read Rick Alba's story on Down the Line, go read it. It's very moving. Yeah, but the idea that you can have that he feels comfortable walking around and playing music. That I felt like that was a testament to what a really good festival that's come from that background can be. I don't know. I'm being kind of vague, but I'm trying not to put motive behind the people who are doing it or the people who are playing it. But for me, it was nice to see everyone being welcomed there.
Yeah, and just so you know, people know, there's definitely a wide range of beliefs represented there. It wasn't necessarily that say the more conservative viewpoint wasn't represented there. It was just you saw people with a wide range of beliefs there. On not only political but also religious ones. I walked into this one seminar and there was a guy up there talking about how horrible it is to tell our kids about transgender and that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, it's reality. We shouldn't hide reality for our kids, So that viewpoint was definitely there. I didn't necessarily agree with it, because I believe kind of more in being honest with our kids, about the way the world is. But, and then you'd go into, I don't know how exactly to describe the political views of Insomniac Folklore, but they're definitely kind of like anarchist leftists as well, don't trust the government kind of stuff. So you had a wide range of these beliefs definitely represented there. And I didn't see any fights break out anywhere. So at least not where I was, at least. So.
Well, that's because they didn't let you bring drugs or alcohol in, maybe. That was the reason for that.
That could have been the reason
for it. And it kind of shut down early, so maybe, it was hot, so people maybe were a bit lethargic.
that's true.
So there might have been a lot of reasons for no fights breaking out. But it was nice that you didn't have – see, I didn't see some of that stuff, but I was only there for one day. So I felt like at least – the contact with the people I had, I felt like everybody was pretty, there was some bumper stickers that I was like, oh boy. But other than that, yeah. I felt like, everybody was on this, had the same idea and on the same page. Being said, like what, I couldn't imagine the expense behind this. And the first time I went, there wasn't a whole lot of people there. This last time, post COVID, there wasn't a whole lot of people there either. Man, talk about a labor of love to put this on.
Yeah.
What do you know about the folks putting this on? Like, I mean, I know that a lot of personal money has been dedicated to this festival. It just seems like they're, really, really trying to do something special and cool. And they did, but it was me, you, Doug, my wife, and the other Matt, and maybe what, 50 other people watching undercover, maybe more than that, but not that many more.
Yeah. I think they got maybe a couple hundred in there, but yeah, it was, there's more room for growth.
Yeah. And that was the main 10, right?
Yeah. That was the main 10. I haven't heard any numbers yet. I don't know if they were going to release numbers of how it attended. I would assume that the Chagall Guevara reunion concert the same weekend and across the country and Nashville probably hurt the attendance some as well, because I know several people that wanted to do both, but they ended up either choosing audio feed or Steve Taylor in Nashville. And I don't know the people behind it, so I really don't know much about them. I think Doug knows a little bit more than I do. But it sounds like it's definitely a labor of love for them. And I heard various stories about some conflicts and even some splits that have happened there, I guess just like any other church. I don't know. So it definitely hasn't been easy going for them, no matter, what the numbers are. But I don't know if they're breaking even or not. I would kind of doubt it. But people are maybe asking, like, why couldn't there be more bands, or why wasn't there, why didn't you get like the 77s or any of these other bands out there? Well, they probably hit their limit with what they had, to get those bands there.
Right, so, because you're flying undercover from you know, I think Florida, California, and DC area with equipment. Mm-hmm. Like that's a lot. That's a lot of money just to do that, yeah. just to fly somebody yeah. out there.
Moral Decay is from California. Woven Hand is that was one dude, but and then what's his name came from Germany, Eric Clayton. And he apparently bought an entourage, you know, from Germany. So there was that as well.
Yeah, that's a lot. Yeah, we're going to have to, you know, get them on and talk to them, promote what they're doing. Because, you know, it was really great for me to be able to see Undercover and, again, meet Rick Alba and Jeff and see Moral Decay and all that kind of stuff. So what you're into a different, somewhat different part of this scene than I am, and came to it from a different perspective. And I know you were like really into collecting like cool old demo tapes and all that kind of stuff, but you also are the one who receives all of the press releases for Down the Line. And I know COVID's been a little weird and a lot of people maybe have put out more stuff than normal. Definitely people aren't touring or whatever, but I mean, what do you see any sort of trend happening? I mean, so we're in this, like, even when Down the Line started, it started with maybe covering maybe even the same people, but with maybe even different belief systems than they have right now. So the whole, I think the focus of the magazine has changed a bit too. But where do you see things like the trajectory of the people that you really wanted to cover and Down the Line versus where things are now and where you think things might be going?
Well, I don't know. Unfortunately, some of it feels like it's petering out a little bit, you know, as far as, you know, some people are dying, you know, some people are retiring, you know, not, thankfully not in huge numbers, but, you know, that is starting to kind of have a bit of an effect. And, you know, it's funny, as far as press releases go, we get so few press releases for the magazine. Like most of the stuff we find, we just have to dig up, you know, bands put on their, you know, website or their band camp or whatever, and then we turn it into a press release.
Oh wow, okay.
yeah, that's what most of these bands probably don't really know a whole lot about writing a press release. And then there's some bands that do a press release for every show that they do, and we're like, you know, I can't fill up our front page or Down the Line with every concert that you have.
Yeah.
That only, like, you know, 20 of our readers can even attend it anyway, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like feast or famine with some bands, you know, get announcements for everything and you kind of have to filter through and go, okay, which one is going to matter to our readers? And then, you know, then there's the bands that don't do anything. It's like, hey, I put out a new CD that I spent the last 4 years recording. Hope you enjoy it. Bye. And that's the only thing you hear from, you know, that's the first thing they posted in years. And it's the last thing they post for several more years.
Yeah.
You know? So, yeah, so we kind of create a lot of our own press releases.
Maybe people will listen to this and you know, Google how to write a press release and send a proper one in.
Yeah, I would just say if you could write a paragraph or two about, you know, why you recorded the album, where people can get it, what it means to you, something, you know, anything that people can connect with. It's a lot better than me going, hey, so-and-so put a new album out. It rocks. Check it out, you know, or whatever. So, I'll say, sorry, the future of this. That's kind of a hard question because it's I don't know if I can afford to go to audio feed next year. We'll see. I'd like to, but I mean, it's hard to say.
But it also depends on who's playing too, right? Because there were years where, you know, you'd mentioned the 77s before and the choir and all those guys. Mm-hmm. I've seen them a lot of times. Mm-hmm. And not that they're not great live. They really are, the Lost Dogs or whatever. But again, if it's going to cost me, you know, the tickets are cheap, that's great, but I don't live there. So it is a process, yeah. You know, it's a hotel room and then all that kind of stuff. And I did stay in my in-laws, you know, a few miles, a few hours away, but it still is a whole thing. It's all, you got to take off of work. Yeah. You got to do the whole deal. I mean, I was skipping work while I was there cause I was there on that Friday or whatever, but just thank God nobody called me and knew where I was, but it is a process. And, you know, I wouldn't go see necessarily, you know, Undercover was kind of a special deal. If Rick Alba played a solo set, I'd be there. But I really can't think of of if I had to spend, you know, $1,000 to get there next year, I don't know if I could really afford that. It didn't cost us that much. But I'm just saying, for somebody who has to fly or drive from a further distance that don't have another interest in the area, that is a lot of money. And, you know, I was there, half the people that were on, because I'm 50, half the people that were on the schedule, I had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
And some of them were really good, too. Some of the new bands I was really excited about. But that's not going to, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I found some new bands to check out. But I was going to say that, you know, Champaign-Urbana is kind of off the beaten path, too. It's even if you want to fly there, it's not exactly the easiest place to fly to because the airport is very small. I can only find one airline that flies there, and it, you know, American Airlines, and they only have 4 flights a day, you know, which is not bad, but it was either, do I take off another day of work or do I show up late and miss some shows, you know? And then I get there and I go to call a cab. It's like 10 o'clock at night and every cab company I'm calling is saying the same thing, you know, hey, we're booked till 10:30 and then we're closed. I just couldn't get a cab. And finally, you know, I called Matt Hunt and he left the festival and came pick me up. It's a small town. There's a good amount of restaurants there because it's a college town, but it's a long drive for everyone that's, you know, in south, in the east, in the west, and then the flights there. And, you know, on the way back, I might have mentioned this to you, I ran into Rob from Moral Decay in the airport. He was on my flight. We chatted for a while. You know, he's a real nice guy. He's a great guy. And so I asked him, I was like, you know, are you from Dallas or why are you going to Dallas? He's like, oh, I'm just catching a connecting flight to California, you know. And I'm like, well, yeah, I had to fly all the way down to Dallas, then out to California, you know, because it's, you know, it's off the beaten path. And that's kind of a factor, I think, that might be hurting the attendance as well.
Yeah. Well, who would be like, if who would you pick? What would be your dream team lineup for next year that would get you motivated?
You know, I would love to see an LSU or Lifesavers, or just both LSU and Lifesavers, and just get Knott to come with like 2 people, and they could just play LSU songs one night, Lifesavers songs another night, Knott solo the other night, you know, whatever. You know, that would be awesome. I've seen Mike Knott solo, and I've seen Knott running Kush at Cornerstone 2000, but I really haven't seen any LSU or Lifesavers. That would definitely be one. Let's see. I have seen the choir of the 77s a couple of times each, but you know, if it could be on the bill with some other bands, that would definitely be a draw. I'm trying to think of people who I haven't seen that I would definitely want to see. I'll have to think about that one. What about you? Who would be yours?
As I mentioned before, I'd love to see Rick Alba doing a solo set. So I encouraged him, you know, I'd say, hey, you know, I'd love to hear that. Hoping he would go do it right then at that front porch stage, but that didn't happen.
Oh, yeah.
We had a really good conversation. Yeah. I would love to see Knott in some sort of thing. I've seen him maybe 3 times, and I think all 3 times were with Steve Hendelong playing percussion, and all 3 times were with Viva Voce opening up. It was all in Nashville. There was a coffee house. And they brought in some really good stuff, and so they always brought Knott in. I think that's about it. And I've seen the 77s like a bunch of times, with of course like post Sticks and Stones lineup, you know.
Yeah.
And then you know, kind of bits and pieces watching Rich Mullins. I saw Rich Mullins, and he had Aaron Smith playing drums.
Oh, wow.
And I think Rick Elias playing guitar. He had a good lineup in that Ragamuffin band.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. But yeah, I don't really know. I probably should. And I've seen Pedro the Lion a bunch of times too. Both of those solo, Dave Bazan at those solo home shows, and then like a full Pedro the Lion concert. So that's always an exciting thing. I would love to see the Danielson family. If they could get the Danielson family, that would be insane. That would be insane. And I do like your idea, like with not like having like, you know, three nights, like Terry Taylor, like you can't watch Terry Taylor for an hour and a half, you know, let's do three nights of Terry Taylor and, you know, in different in incarnations, you know, with Rob Watson or with, you know, whatever. And you could do something like that. And I think that would be pretty cool. But again, you know, that's my dream team, not who would actually draw the biggest crowd.
Well, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, there's your problem right there, drawing the crowd.
Yeah, it's you know, I think people have changed their. I saw a article in the Wall Street Journal or something, but it said that restaurants are really having a hard time with, you know, like 18 and 19 year olds coming out to eat. They just don't. They're you know, COVID happened during some formative dining years, I guess, and they're just not doing it now, and so. I feel like the same thing's happening maybe with these concerts and these festivals too. Now, this was a beautiful outdoor festival. The tents were great. When it rained, you stayed dry. I mean, they did it first class, top notch, all the way. But I think there is still something about, I'm not going to go in. I'm just going to stay home and watch something on, you know, Twitch or whatever they do. So I think that's part of the issue too, is you're not going to have a whole lot of new people maybe into the festival. And I could be wrong, and it could just be this weird kind of music that we're into. And, you know, I know there's Bonnaroo and all these other festivals that Coachella that do really well. But that's not our scene. So.
Yeah.
And then again, if that's the competition for audio feed, at least for people of a certain age group, then that's, you know, where you're going to spend your money.
Yeah. Yeah, so I wonder if they can get someone like Pedro the Lion, if they can get someone like King's X, or you know, some band like that. You know, I don't know how much King's X even costs, but you know, you're talking about people that have the connection to the Christian scene, but have struck out on their own and you know had some you know, I mean not massive success, but they've had some success you know outside of the scene. I was wondering if you could get, you know, more people like that even there. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. That would be really cool. Yeah, I just don't know. I mean, I've booked gigs here, and then I've always worked in, you know, Christian radio, so I kind of know how much people cost, at least at a certain point in time. And I was kind of doing the math in my head for this festival. I'm like, my word, this is a lot of money getting, or at least a lot of potential money. That's being spent here, you know, for these shows. But who in the younger, like what younger bands did you see that you got pretty excited about?
Oh, let's see. Who all did I watch and see? Is it Narrow Arrow? There was some kind of math rock band that I saw. Was pretty good. I think it was Narrow Arrow.
Yeah. Listen to them before we got there. They're good.
Yeah. Steve Scott, of all people, had recommended that go see someone named Heather Hammers.
Okay.
And so I caught her show, and it was good. It was really good. Who else did I see? Oh, I'm drawing a blank on some of the bands. I kind of also floated in and out of several, you know, bands just so I could catch several, you know.
Yeah, right.
There's impromptu stage. I caught this dude named Mike Indes. It was pretty cool.
You terrible know, show, our, yeah.
He yes. didn't play my request, but, you know,
yeah. it was still... That was next time
I'll bring
all the proper gear next time. we'll make that happen. Yeah, well, thanks to Doug for signing me up for that, because that list got pretty full pretty fast. So
yeah,
and there was kind of... three more people there than at the first time I played there back in 20.
Wow. Okay.
It's hard to compete when you got like death metal going on in like 20 feet away, you know?
Yeah, that was interesting watching the interplay between that impromptu tent and the main tent there, you know, especially when, what was her name? Rosie Thomas went over, and there was like a sludge core, you know, hardcore, whatever band waiting to play. Then they cranked it up as soon as she stopped. But Pedro the Lion was trying to sound check.
Oh, man.
While they were going. And he handled it well. He even clapped for one of their songs once they finished it. But
Oh, man.
This Pedro the Lion is trying to, you know, sound check when there's a band right there, you know, in the side stage going, you know, it's just kind of like, wow.
Maybe they should have some limitations on what kind of bands, like, you know, how loud you can be or what kind of music you can play at the side stage, because it, you know, it faces the crowd, the side of the crowd.
Yeah, I know.
That's nuts.
But everyone was nice and waited for each other. It was just, you know, it's kind of, it was what it was. But
yeah. It's funny. You know, they didn't utilize the stage that actually exists there, that wooden stage that was next to the place where you'd go and listen to the people talk and get the coffee and stuff, right? Nobody ever played on that, the legit wooden stage that was there.
Yeah, I caught Insomniac Folklore.
Oh, you did? Okay.
They did a children's set the last day that I was there, right before I had to head out and catch my plane. So I watched that for a little bit, and that was fun. That was like their third set, so the lead singer was, you know, his voice had already gone out, and he was kind of nursing it a lot, but they did pretty well. That was kind of fun. That was and I saw a couple other bands like that set up there, but it wasn't on the schedule, so you wouldn't have known, you know.
I gotcha.
To catch it, and they had like a little kids area set up next to it as well, with some art stuff in it too. So I think that's supposed to be like the little kids stage arena there, or something like that. Yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, well, I was excited, and I hope next year they'll have another good lineup. You know, we had gone to Cruel World Fest back in May, and that was in Pasadena, and the lineup was, you know, Bauhaus, Reunited, and Morrissey, and the Church, and PIL, or whatever. And it was kind of like a dream team lineup. And then people were like saying, well, who's going to do it next year? And I'm like, it kind of have to be almost the same lineup for me to be interested in again. You know, it's kind of crazy. And, you know, part of that too is we had a really good time. But I was like, well, we saw bands that we really liked for 45 minutes. We could kind of go see them while they're on tour for an hour and a half or 2 hours and sit down. And not be outside in the sun. So I guess, you know, your festivals are competing with artists that are touring too.
Yeah.
You know, to go and see them. You'd mentioned the Chagall show in Nashville. I guess Kevin Max's band Sad Astronaut opened up for them. Do you know anything about them? I just kind of saw it on social media.
Yeah, I've heard of that band. I wasn't aware they'd open. I know Over at the Rhine was there. And there's also so many guest people showing up, and after party concerts apparently, and, like, you know, random people there. It was kind of like this whole national celebration. So,
oh wow, okay,
I understand why they had it there. You know, it was just it'd be nice if they could have done it at audio feed.
Yeah, that would have been cool. But Chagall's not on tour, right? That was just kind of a one-off.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah, as far as I know, that was just a one-off thing.
And they're not trying to do a new record or any of that?
Yeah, kind of a newish record with some old songs and some new songs and some cover songs.
Oh, interesting. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of go ahead.
It kind of grew from their original idea, so it's kind of a smorgasbord of a record.
What, that was the original idea of the band, was to do something like that?
No, the original idea was just to put out this live album they've had recorded for decades now. And then they decided, hey, let's record some new songs. And I said, oh, we do some covers too. And then we can also throw some of these other old leftover songs, you know, from the past on there. It's about 9 tracks total now, I think.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
And they have a Kickstarter or something going on for that? Or they're just...
Yeah, they did back in the past. It's they're sending out, they're fulfilling it mostly. You have to go like their Bandcamp page to buy the stuff now, just directly from them.
And are they going to make it available to stream? There's a lot of bands now that aren't doing that, like the latest Vector album. And I think the 77s, there's a few albums that you're like, there's an album out, but where is it? And you kind of have to just buy the physical copy now, right? Or buy the downloads.
Yeah, buy it from them directly is the only place you can get it, yeah. But I don't know. That's a good question. I haven't really heard if they're going to put it on streaming services or not.
Interesting. Yeah, that's another aspect of this music business that's kind of fascinating to me right now is how people do the math, right? So I got 500 fans who are willing to spend $10. Do I just keep it very insular, or do I put it out somewhere where, you know, a lot of people can listen and maybe gain some more fans, and then maybe be able to license some stuff, you know, or whatever. I find that we'll have to find somebody to interview to talk about that, because I find that pretty fascinating about how that decision's made. I mean, Bill Maloney is probably the best example of that, right? There's like nothing, right, on streaming services. I think you have to buy everything directly from him on Bandcamp, and he's got, you know, 80 plus records or whatever there, but I couldn't find anything on the streaming services at all.
Most of the stuff is gone.
Yeah, that's not all. That's fascinating to me that that's how he's chosen to do business, you know?
Yeah, and it's a hard choice to make, because it's like you get the exposure, but then almost no money from the streams.
Right.
You know, so it's a bit of a, if it were me, I would probably put out like a sampler on Spotify, you know, and then, you know, people can stream the sampler all they want to, but then the bulk of your music is somewhere that you can control it, you know.